Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Super Fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Yes, they are. Welcome to what should be a rousing edition of Pod Vader and the Super Fans on the Next Fan Up podcast, as we are talking about possibly, and I'm going to say this so you guys don't get a big head, possibly the best division in the NFL, that the AFC North. My name is Pod Vader. I am joined today by the Super Fans of the AFC North. And as always, when talking about these guys, we start with the king of the super fans. That's Rex in Baltimore Ravenland. Hello, Rex.
What is up, boys?
And normally the host of the AFC North is our friend from across the pond. That's Ingrid Lemon representing the Cincinnati Bengals.
Good afternoon / morning, fellas. And can you stop calling Rex the king of the super fans? It really does.
Yeah, but can we?
Maybe we'll see. You have the name Rex. It means king.
Okay. So. I just want to make it known that I never named myself the Rex or the king. You put that moniker on me.
That is very true. And it's going to stick because it's me and that's what I do. Perhaps the king of the division is in Pittsburgh with the Steelers, and that's Greg.
I'm doing great, but I'm not in Pittsburgh. I'm actually in the mistake by the lake. So I got I'm tracking and Johnny.
And well, the mistake by the lake is represented by Rob, and that's the Cleveland Browns.
There's no crying in Mudville because the Cavs are not going to win. The Browns are looking bad.
Well, you know, that's what happens in Cleveland. If you would like to join our little band of super fans, we have quite a few openings available, including one in Buffalo. You guys still suck. One in Arizona and one now in Houston, my favorite city to say. You want to send those applications to nextfanup@gmail.com. That's nextfanup@gmail.com. We've had a few applications over the past few weeks, which I've read here on the air. Unfortunately, all those teams are already taken. So I can't believe that there's no fans out there that want to talk about the Houston Texans or the sucky Buffalo Bills or the Arizona Cardinals. So come on, guys, get those in. Tweet us at NFU Podcast. You can also check us out on Facebook where we post all sorts of good stuff for you. That's Next Fan Up. Just search us on Facebook or go to Facebook.com/NFU Podcast. Before we get deep into the previews, there's a couple of stories this week in the NFL that I want to address. And we're going to start with the San Francisco 49ers. They had yet another retirement, gentlemen, their fourth retirement this season, this offseason. And that's offensive tackle Anthony Davis. He retires at age 25, citing concerns from health. I'm not buying these concerns for health. Yes, you know, football is a tough sport. And yes, a couple of these players have suffered from concussions. But I'm wondering if Jim Harbaugh caught wind of this and said, yeah, I'm out of here, and took the job in Michigan, or these are Jim Harbaugh loyalists. Rex, what do you think?
Well, I'm not sure what it is. It seems odd that it's only the San Francisco 49ers players that have injury concerns. Otherwise, I would believe this. If this was four players from, say, four different teams spread throughout the league, be perfectly understandable. But this is sort of weird. However, I'm not – Harbaugh was let go, right? He didn't step down, or he was – so – and he didn't know – that doesn't mesh well with me. I don't really see that. And then as far as them being – Harbaugh loyalists, what are they going to go to Michigan and play? I mean, what's their plan? When Chris Borland first retired, the first thing I thought to myself is wow, I'm not, what's he going to fall back on? So I did a little research, and his father owns some financial firm that does really, really well. So that was light bulb went on. His father probably said, look, let's get out of this sport and you're going to be taken care of. But I'm wondering about the other guys. Justin Smith was a bit old, so that that could be. Am I right? Justin Smith was the older one.
Yeah, he's 35. He's ready to go.
So you could say that, and then you got Patrick Willis, who suffered from turf toe. Turf toe has ended many players' careers. The injured Davis, that's the one. That's the one that I'm really scratching my head about.
I would say before we went live that I think coming out of the draft, he had a bit of a questionable personality. I don't know him, obviously, so I can't say, but it was always a bit different and a bit unique. I think he's kind of maybe gone, you know what, last year I had a couple of games where I missed them, so let's maybe take some time off and come back. But it was quite interesting because his statement made it sound like he was having a year break, and then the 49ers released saying that he retired. So there's a bit of a confusion there. So I'm interested to sort of see if whether or not next season comes back, or even in this sort of training camp he comes back. You never know, but that is a strange one. You're right.
Yeah, he missed 9 games last year, and the year before that he missed 3. He's had a lot of injuries over his career, and he's only been in the league 3 years now. So I think he's generally concerned. Simon said, he's only said he wants to sit out like a year or two and then come back, which is a weird thing to do. I'm wondering if, you know, the money will bring him back or whatever, but the Niner thing, he retires, but then he said he didn't. It's just a weird miscommunication, and that ownership has shown that they're not the smartest bunch.
I mean, could he just be like a Ricky Williams type guy? Once they go off and have fun for a year in his mid-20s and then come back later?
I think a lot of these younger guys that retired from the 49ers are going to do just that. It's sort of like the year off, go backpack in Europe and come back and get to real work. A lot yet to be seen about what's going on in San Francisco, and I can't wait to preview the NFC West and talk about the 49ers being the worst team in that division. That's quite the fall from grace for the San Francisco 49ers.
How the mighty have fallen.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of falling, the NFL, that was a horrible transition, I just want to add. The NFL has decided to cancel a fantasy football convention that Tony Romo was the headliner for. Now, you're going to see a lot of headlines this morning. That's why I'm bringing it up, because I saw the headlines this morning. But if you read the actual article a little more closely, the reason why the NFL canceled this isn't because they hate fantasy football. It's because there's a rule that states that NFL licensed or NFL players are not allowed to be involved in activities that are sponsored by casinos, specifically those of Las Vegas. And this particular event was being put on by the Venetian in Las Vegas. So don't worry, fantasy football fans. The NFL is not coming down on fantasy football. They just don't want Tony Romo to be involved with a casino. It doesn't look good for the NFL. And our last news item before we get into the preview here, Cam Newton earlier this week got himself a brand new deal, 5 years, $103.8 million. We all know the funky accounting that NFL teams do with their quarterback contracts, but this is significant, as next year we're looking at new deals for Phillip Rivers, Eli Manning, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck have deals coming up. But also, as we were talking about this before we went on the air, Joe Flacco appears to be sort of on a deal-by-deal, year-by-year basis, Rex. So what do you think this deal is going to do with Joe Flacco's contract?
Well, I was between me and my group of friends, I was the one that always said when Flacco signed his last deal, everybody was head slapping going, how can they pay him so much? How can they pay him so much? I always defended it. Look, the fact of the matter is when it comes to quarterback contracts in the NFL, it's always the guy whose deal is up next. He's going to be made the highest paid player as long as they're decent quarterbacks. When Flacco was made, got his contract and he was the highest paid, I said, that's only going to last like 8 months. And sure enough, in 8 months, he was down to like number 3. Now I think he's down to like number 5. And he's going to keep on falling. So he will renegotiate a new contract next year. His cap hit is way too much. And this will absolutely be the basis of it. Will he be the highest paid quarterback this time next year? I have no idea. Because I don't know when Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson's contracts is going to come up. But this is going to be a never-ending upward spiral from between the better quarterbacks in the league because they have to sign them. They have to backload their contracts. And when their contracts come up, they're going to be renegotiated. And this is going to be with all the top quarterbacks. Just my opinion.
And Simon, you got a quarterback with a contract that may or may not have a year by year thing going on as well, and Andy Dalton.
That's right. So basically going forward after this season, we can let Andy Dalton go with no cap penalty, really. So the savings get more and more each so the years go by. But yeah, I think he has a 6-year deal, obviously just the second year of that deal. But I think him and Marvin Lewis will be connected for as long as they're sort of in Cincinnati. And then if we have a bad year this year, which could potentially happen, you never know, it could be the end of the Dalton era, potentially.
Greg, I don't think you're worried too much in Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger. But
no, I thought it was interesting that, you know, from what I read, the Cam Newton deal is based off the Roethlisberger deal. And I just thought that was interesting because I think both of them can be done after 3 years or something like that. So I just think last year with Dalton's deal being able to get out after a couple of years, I wonder if that's the new trend in these huge deals. I kind of like it. So
look around the league. Kaepernick has a similar type of deal to Dalton as well. So I think if you've got something to prove as a quarterback, you know, you've not really raised the level of your teammates, and also, you know, playoff success for Dalton's obviously been zero. So I think it's the best way that the teams can protect themselves to say, listen, you've got to go and prove it. But still, it shows that even like mid-level quarterbacks like Dalton, if you haven't got one, you know, you're still stuck in a bit of a mire, to be honest. And that's possibly a good segue to bring Rob in about the Browns, but to have, yeah, 3-year deal from McCown, I'm sure that's probably one you can get out of as well, I imagine.
Yeah, I see them changing quarterbacks maybe mid-season, and then even, you know, by the end of the year, he'll be gone too. So I can add another name to my list of quarterbacks that they've had since they moved back here.
So let's, Greg, I'm going to continue now with you and talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. As I look over the division quickly and briefly, and I know we're going to get a lot of argument from Rex on this, I see the Steelers as perhaps the team to beat in the division. I'm sure you as the superfan believe the same. Perhaps you'd like to explain why they would be the team to beat in this division.
Well, it has to all be about offense, which is really strange when you're talking about the Steelers. I think overall, when you add it together, the line, the receiving options, the running backs, and Big Ben, they have the best offense in the division. And with these new rules in the league where you can't touch the receivers and you can't hit the quarterback, I don't know how else you win anymore. So, you know, with the turnover at the position, wide receiver and tight end for the Ravens, I think maybe their offense is going to take half a season to get going. And maybe that'll be enough for the Steelers this year. But that's pretty much it. I'm more worried about next offseason than this offseason. So,
Rex, I'm sure you believe your team is the one to beat in the division.
Not only do I believe that, but you can hear from Greg. Greg believes that. The Ravens have been to 2 Super Bowls and go to the playoffs most seasons, and there has never been a season heading into it that I have felt as confident as I do with this team. There are no weaknesses on this team. The only thing that can be pointed to as a weakness would be a receiver, but if OTAs and anything are any indication, and I realize they're not, receiver could be one of our deepest positions. The guy that made the most headlines was our 6th-round pick, Darren Waller. They said that, I mean, the guy is huge. He's 6'6", 240 pounds, and they said he caught everything that came his way. So, like I said, anything less than a Super Bowl trip for the Ravens this year will be a disappointment for me.
Interesting. Simon, is your team going to compete for the division crown?
We'll be thereabouts. I think we're last season, obviously, 3 teams went to the playoffs, but we were fortunate that we played the 2 South divisions, which were pretty terrible. And this year's a bit tougher, so we played the NFC West. And we also play the AFC East, is it, guys? I think. So that's going to be tougher this year. I think we have got to win some of the bigger games. So we have to start winning in Pittsburgh, and also in Baltimore. I know we won last year in Baltimore, but that was that was close. We've got to win some more close games, and I think it comes on Dalton to lift his performance. But we get Marvin Jones back, we get Tyler Eifert back. I think the defense will be better with Michael Johnson coming back. So I think we'll be better. I'm not sure we'll be a playoff team, but I think that's because it's a tough division and anybody can be anybody, really.
Rob, not to pile on, as you started off in a sort of morose tone here, but I don't believe you think your team has a chance to compete. But if they did, what would be the reason your team vaulted their way to the top?
Well, it's got to be the defense. So that's what they focused on mainly through the draft and some of their offseason pickups. So I really like what they're doing on their defense. I think that they're trying to build their team up so that when they find a quarterback, they can pop him right in and he's ready to go. Especially if you draft one, you want, you know, a team built around him. So I think that they're doing that. I think we'll be better than last year, especially on defense. But I don't know if our record will show it because we don't get to play the NFC South again. So we play the AFC West and the NFC West, and both of those are going to be pretty tough.
That's right.
I'm really impressed with the Browns' offensive line, and they look to have an absolute three-headed monster at running back.
I totally agree, and I think that they're going with the theory that I've heard being kicked around, kind of like a Moneyball theory, where there's only 10 to 12 good quarterbacks in the league. So if you don't have one, build up your defense and just get a stout running game, and then just do that. And I think that that's what they're going to try and do. I love the running back that we have with the three guys and the guy that we drafted, Duke Johnson, from in the draft this year. I think he's going to be great. But we'll see. I mean, the defense has got to step up a lot more than they were last year. You know, 32nd against the run is not going to pull it. But they solidified the inside interior of that line and up the middle in the linebacker core. So I think they're going to give people some games more so than people think, just because everybody kind of looks at the skill positions of receiver and quarterback. But I think it's going to be interesting.
What do we like so much about Cleveland's running backs here? What's the big hype here? I'm looking at Isaiah Crowell. I'm looking at Terrence West. You mentioned Duke Johnson and Sean Drawn. I mean, I'm not doing backflips over that.
I understand that. I mean, I think they're going to be a little bit. It's a little bit of kind of thunder and lightning, right? So Crowell was on pace for a 1,000-yard season last year before he got hurt, and they bring in West to kind of, you know, spell him during the year. So then West became the main guy. They both had over 700 yards rushing. So it's not great numbers, but I think that with increased carries, you're going to see increased numbers from both those guys. And the offensive line is just really, really, really solid. So, you know, Joe Thomas and then that Joel Bettina guy that they drafted last year, both are probable all pros. And so I just think that they're going to be a lot more solid. And you're going to see a better year out of McCown because he's going to be on his feet because of the offensive line. It's not going to be great. I'm not expecting, you know, Tom Brady type numbers. But I with him on his feet, I think you'll just see a better offense all around. It'll just be a better product on the field. And you're not going to – when you have a solid quarterback as well, like, you know that he's there and you're not trying to switch out Thad Lewis and Johnny Manziel and Brian Hoyer and seeing which one works. You just go with the guy that you have and just stick with it. It just brings a lot more, I guess, say in locker room.
And honestly, Rex, I'm surprised that you brought up the Browns running backs. I would think you have a better running back core there in Baltimore.
Well, running backs other than, say, what, five of them at the top of the league, you can pretty much mix them all up. What I like about Cleveland's running backs is they're all, you know, what the old, not counting Drone or Drawn, whatever his name is. The other two were rookies last year. Then they got another rookie this year. They got a solid offensive line. They're just going to be able to wear people down, provided their defense can keep the score close enough. I see Cleveland losing a lot of close games, 14, 13, 17, 10 games. But at the end of the game, that's when quarterbacks come to win the games for them, and they don't have that kind of ammunition. But they got the defense that's going to be able to keep games close, and they got the running game that's going to be able to keep the other team's offense off the field until crunch time, and then the better quarterbacks rise to the top. But as far as the Ravens running backs, yes, I love them. I mean, Lorenzo Talaferro, I don't know why he's not been mentioned more. Everybody says, well, he got in the doghouse because of his fumbling problems. The man had one fumble. He had one fumble. It came at a bad time, but he had one fumble. And he's come back leaner this year. He says he wants to be more than just a short yardage back. Of course, we got Justin Forsett back, who opened everyone's eyes last year. And again, that was a product of how good our offensive line is, which is where I'm really stoked about this team. They're returning their top seven offensive linemen, which is the first time that's happened. And in as long as I can remember, I can tell you this, this is the first time they've returned their top five starters in the same position since John Ogden was playing. That's why I'm excited about the Ravens running game. And I'm excited about the Browns running game for the same reason, because they got a great offensive line. He forgot to mention Alex Mack.
Yeah, honestly, we've been doing a few of these previews now for the past few weeks. If you've missed any of them, please check us out on iTunes, or you can go to blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. All of our episodes are listed there, and you can listen to them, enjoy them, check out our division previews as we've been going along here. But what I like the most about this particular division is how equal I think a lot of the teams are. And as we're talking about the running backs, and I'm looking at the rosters for the running backs, the Bengals have a great running back core, and Pittsburgh, I think, has a pretty decent core as well. Now, the one thing I'll say about Pittsburgh is Le'Veon Bell's got to keep his head on straight and stay on the field and not get himself suspended.
Well, we all know what happened there. That was a whole Bill Belichick conspiracy who sent LeGarrette Blount there to get him. I mean, that's what happened. We all know this.
Sure. But I'm skipping right over it because I know we're going to end. We'll devolve into some sort of conversation about the Patriots, and I'm not allowing it to happen today. But
we don't care as well.
Exactly. Which team? And feel free to raise your hand. Which team has the best running back core in this division?
We do. We definitely do. I think Jeremy Hill was an absolute stud at the end of last year. Giovanni Bernard might be the best pass-catching running back in this division. And a couple of guys that people don't mention, like obviously Cedric Pierman's an absolute special teams maven. And then Rex Burkhead, he's going to be the best white running back next year, hands down. He's going to be a jack of all trades. So watch out for us next year. I think we can have potentially two running backs over 1,000 yards.
Simon, what was that last thing about the running back?
What you mean about Rex Burkhead?
Yeah.
It's going to be the best white running back in the league next year.
Okay.
Danny Woodley, we're coming for your title, young man.
Well, I think it's cute that we spent 5 minutes talking about the two worst running games in the division. I actually think the Bengals do have the best running back core. I mean, those two guys they got, Bernard and Hill, are just awesome. I think either one of them could be a feature back. But I think the best running back in the division, and I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, is Bell. I mean, I love Le'Veon Bell. So, I mean, they have nothing else besides him, which is their big problem. But
Greg, I don't think anyone's arguing that Le'Veon Bell is the best single running back, but Pod said running back core.
Understood. And I caveated that. I already said that the Bengals have the best. So,
you know. People listening to a Steelers fan just praised us. Let's have a party tonight to celebrate. But he's Greg spot on. He's absolutely spot on.
Well, and of course, a great running back is nothing without an offensive line. So now I'm probably pointing at you, Rex, but perhaps some others might disagree. Rex, you have the best O-line in the division?
I don't know about the best O-line in the division, but I like our O-line. We have solid from, like I said, returning all five starters, returning our top two reserves, and then we have we just drafted another guy this year that is pretty highly touted. The only worry we have is both our guards. This is the last year of their contract, and they're both going to be free agents next year. And there's no way that we're going to be able to pay both of them what they're worth. So who do you take? Do you take Marshall Yanda, who is one of the top two or three guards in the league, but he's in his 30s now? Or do you go with Kelechi Osemele, who has all the talent in the world, but has had a history of back problems? That's the decision Ozzie's going to have to make from now until then. Now, the word is that they are trying to re-sign Marshall Yanda. But as far as our offensive line, I mean, I'm really excited about it. We have like I said, returning the top seven guys. And I think that continuity means everything with the offensive line, as last week's guest will attest.
Yeah, if you're talking about full depth, then I have to agree with Baltimore. But for Cleveland, I mean, our starting five, if we can stay healthy, is pretty darn good, especially with this pick of Cam Irving in the first round. They're saying that he's been playing every single position during the at least on the offensive line during the OTAs. And I think they're really, really getting ready for when Alex Mack leaves at the end of this year and put him at center. But they'll start at guard this year, at right guard. They'll move Schwartz over to tackle. So I like our starting five. Just depth-wise, we're pretty thin.
Andrew Whitworth and Andre Smith are up for contract next year, but we've got quite a good little line for a few years now. The one position I don't like is the centre, Russell Bodine, but there's a potential that basically Jake Fisher could play some guard for us, and we can move Clint Bowling into centre. So we'll see how that goes, but I think we're definitely trying to get better on the offensive line, and with two picks at tackle, I think that's obviously signaled that intent for us to be quite a bit more physical up front.
When it comes to offensive lines, I think the Steelers have it because they're returning the same group of starting fives. This will be the third season now. Well, I guess 2.5 seasons that they'll have the exact same five guys. And this is the second year with Mike Munchak. And when I don't know, from everything I understand about offensive line play, which is very, very little, it's all about the offensive line coach and how he gets them to work together. So,
well, I wonder as I switch positions here, and we stay on the offensive side of the ball. Your offensive line has clearly undergone a lot of testing over the past few years there in Pittsburgh, but you do have Ben Roethlisberger behind them. He's a great escape artist, and he's helped out quite a bit by that wide receiving core.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that wide receiving core they have there anymore is it's just amazing, and they keep adding pieces. I mean, in my opinion, maybe I was going to say pound for pound, Antonio Brown's the best wide receiver in the league. But I think Rex would take exception with that with Steve Smith. But, I mean, Antonio Brown's just awesome. And I'm really high on Marcus Wheaton, which apparently everyone else has forgotten about. He was a really polished receiver coming out when we got him in the third round 2 years ago. And everyone's in love with this Martavis Bryant, because he hits those 80-yard touchdowns. But I really love Marcus Wheaton. I think he's poised for a huge breakout season. So, yeah, I'm high, and I don't know. Sammy Coates will probably never play this year, but the receiving core for the Steelers can't be any deeper than it is. I don't remember it ever being deeper, let's put it that way.
I'll back you up on the talk about Antonio Brown, and I'll just say Steve Smith is an aging wonder who I think – certainly for his size and for what he provides and the fire and passion that he still has makes up for a lot of what he doesn't have. But I would not take Steve Smith over Antonio Brown. Rex, I can't believe
it. Or AJ Green.
Well, and there's AJ Green throwing his hat in there as well. Let's start with you, Rex, and talk about Steve Smith versus Antonio Brown.
Oh, there's no comparison. Antonio Brown is, what, 10 years younger? I mean, he's just a much better receiver at this point. As we were talking about before the show, the Ravens have never had a true number one receiver. All they get is number twos and guys that were former number ones, and then they're now older, Steve Smith, Anquan Boldin, before that Derek Mason. That's what the Ravens do. That's what Ozzie does. I hate it, but how can I argue with it? They keep winning. So, but as far as the receiving core goes, well, talk about the Steelers. I think Ben Roethlisberger makes those receivers more times than not. I mean, no one's questioning Antonio Brown's good, but when receivers leave the Steelers, what happens to them? You don't really hear much from them. I think I'm one of the few Ravens fans that will confidently say Ben Roethlisberger is one of the three best quarterbacks in the league and a hands down first ballot Hall of Famer. The guy is great and I hate him. But as far as the Ravens receivers, I'm really excited about this. Yes, we lost Torrey Smith. Torrey Smith was a local college product. We all liked him. I liked his ability to go deep and to draw passing PIs. I didn't like how not physical he was going back to the playoff game against the New England. That interception that ended the game. Had he been a more physical receiver, the man would have went up and got the ball or kept that man from intercepting the ball. His lack of physicality lost the game. Some people say, oh, Flacco should have never thrown the pass. You can argue that. You can argue that he can. The point is, Steve Smith was not physical enough, which is why we didn't even try to match what San Francisco paid him. The Ravens have put together a basketball team at wide receiver other than Steve Smith. Every guy is 6'2" or larger. You got Kamar Aiken, who's really opening eyes. I can't believe it. I mean, this is a guy that's on his fourth team in 5 years, and I've always said there's a reason for that, but he keeps catching everything that comes to him. Marlon Brown had a fantastic rookie year. Last year, he took kind of a step back, but that was basically because we had Steve Smith. So all the targets that went to Marlon Brown the year before were now going to Steve Smith. And of course, I mentioned Darren Waller, sixth round pick, who so far in OTAs have caught everything that came near him. And his question was does he have the hands coming out of Georgia Tech's option offense? And right now he's really opening eyes. So I'm very excited about the Ravens receivers, although I will admit their receiving core is behind the Steelers and the Bengals in this division.
Yeah, I definitely want to get more to the AJ Green versus the rest of the division. But as I'm looking here at Baltimore too, what are you guys doing at tight end? And actually, it seems to be a common question as I continue to look more and more at these depth charts and doing these previews. What is everybody doing at tight end?
Would you like me to address the Ravens first?
Yes, please.
Okay. The Ravens are developing a real good problem at tight end. I personally believe that Dennis Pitta is going to start the season on the PUP list. If you would have asked me three, four months ago what was going to be Dennis Pitta, I would have said the man's probably going to retire. I mean, it was heartbreaking watching him in the third or fourth game last year against Cleveland just go crumple to the ground without being touched. And everybody knew exactly what it was because it was the same injury he had the year before. But he's worked his tail off. He's in OTAs. He hasn't done anything with the team and everything, but he's doing all the activities on the sideline. And I believe he's going to play. The Ravens, I believe he's going to play at some point this season. Like I said, I think he'll start the season on the PUP list, which means he'll miss the first six games. The Ravens drafted two tight ends this year. Of course, they got the guy in the second round, Max Williams, who was, by everyone's account, the best tight end coming out of college this year. So they got him. And in the later round, they got a blocking tight end out of Delaware named Nick Boyle. He came in with the reputation of good blocker, not much for hands. Well, he has apparently caught everything that's come his way, and Joe Flacco has especially targeted him in the red zone. This is another guy that's 6'6". And then there's last year's third-round pick, Crockett Gilmore, who worked out with a high – I can't recall the guy's name. I wish I had wrote it down, but apparently the man runs a highly touted offensive line camp out of Arizona, and apparently – Crockett Gilmore trained with them all summer. He's apparently put on 15 to 20 pounds of muscle. And according to Jameson Hemsley, who is ESPN's NFC North correspondent, he believes that Crockett Gilmore is going to start the season as the starter. That's how good he's looked. So I think the Ravens have a really good problem developing with four quality tight ends to work with.
I think you're putting a lot of trust in these OTAs,
and I will definitely have right now because they're rookies.
And you're right, and I will definitely couch that. That's all that we do have to go on, and we'll know more obviously when preseason begins and we see some of these position battles play out, and we have some preseason games to go off of as well. But yes, we're talking wide receivers, and we haven't even started to begin talking about AJ Green and the entire Cincinnati Bengals core, which perhaps was my fault. I may have missed here, and I think this could possibly be the best group of wide receivers in the division.
Possibly, yeah, possibly. I think we need to get more from it. I think Marvin Jones' injury proved how thin we were. I think we didn't address it really in the draft as well. So a lot of stock in him being healthy again this year, and also getting Tyler Eifert back, who I know is a tight end, but obviously is a good pass-catching option for us. So we'll see. Yeah, I think hopefully if Marvin Jones does come back, that makes AJ Green's life a little bit easier as well. And with the running game we've got as well, we should have a really nice, well-rounded offense. And we were top 10 in 2013, but I'm hoping we can get back there again, because I think we need to be better than we were last year, and we weren't very good on offense, to be honest. I think Dalton threw for 20 TDs, and he'd thrown for 33 the year before, so there's a big loss there. And I think we need to get back to sort of the high 20s for us to be a good offense, really, to challenge the Steelers.
And Rob, Cleveland is at least gone out and attempted to redo their entire wide receiver core. The question is going to be, is a change of scenery a good thing for Dwayne Bowe, or is Dwayne Bowe just Dwayne Bowe? And Brian Hartline, I think, might have been a little bit of an overachiever in Miami, and he's certainly not going to have a Ryan Tannehill throwing him the ball.
It's apropos that you come to me last for the wide receiver core, because we are definitely last in this division in terms of the talent. But I think, going back to my earlier comment, I think that they've gotten some guys that maybe are possession receivers and are really, really good at blocking, because I think they're just going to focus on the running game again this year. And so at tight end, they have this kid named Gary Barnridge, who they've had for a couple of years. And he is just a blocker. He's not there. So he's an extra offensive lineman, in essence. In terms of Dwayne Bowe, I think you'll see better numbers out of him. I don't think it can get any worse than it was in Kansas City, with their receivers catching zero touchdowns. I think that's more of a knock on Alex Smith than it is on Dwayne Bowe. He had so many balls that just were not catchable for him. He's a, you know, 10 to 15 yard over the middle guy. He's a big guy. And Alex Smith just doesn't have the arm to make those out routes that he likes to run, or over the middle. He throws them a little too high. So I actually think Josh McCown is a step up for him in terms of what routes he likes to run. I'm not saying overall that Josh McCown's better than Alex Smith, but just in terms of what he likes to run. So I think you'll see a better year out of him. But again, he's another big guy, and you saw what he was able to do for Jamal Charles in terms of blocking. So I think that they're trying to get receivers that, you know, kind of possession receivers that can block downfield, and that's kind of what they got.
So, Rob, don't go anywhere. I know we haven't talked to you in a while during this podcast, but we're going to stick right here with you. We've mentioned the Cleveland Browns defense, and defense has always been an interesting aspect for Cleveland. They've always done pretty well with linebackers and their front seven, really, overall. You have Joe Hayden in the backfield. You have a Dante Whitner at strong safety. I mean, your defense is definitely looking very strong.
Yeah, I'm really excited about what they're going to be able to do this year. Their defensive backfield for the past couple of years has been pretty strong. They brought in some guys that made it even better. So yeah, like you said, Dante Whitner. I think Hayden, you know, is obviously Pro Bowl cornerback. They really like what they've seen out of Justin Gilbert this year. I think he's kind of gotten over his immaturity aspects, and although he's going to back up Williams at the right cornerback, but they really like what they've done. And then, you know, just, they needed to be able to stop the run. Like I've said many times, they were 32nd against the run last year. That killed them. So getting Danny Shelton in the first pick, their first pick of the draft, was great. He's a huge man who can just, you know, absorb blockers and stop the run up the middle. And then I really think their linebackers are, you know, another year under Mingo's for him is going to make him a lot better. I like the Nate Orchard pick that they got for him for outside linebacker. The guy's just an athlete and can just get to the quarterback. And I think you'll see Kruger step up a little bit better too, when, you know, you have a better defensive line in front of you that can absorb more blockers. Your outside linebackers are always that much better.
Cincinnati has always had a strong defense under Marvin Jones. That might be a little hyperbole, but they have been strong as of late. Simon, what do you think of Cincinnati on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, I think we'll be much, much better than we were last year, year two of Paul Gunther. Obviously, last year we sort of, obviously, Mike Zimmer's in Minnesota now, and he was a huge loss in terms of the sort of play calling. And also, just, we've added some players there. We weren't very deep last year on the defensive line, and that kind of took away our rotation, which is really, really paramount to our success. Linebacker as well was absolutely savaged last year by injury. Bontez Burfict is still likely to be on the pup list as we go into the season, but we can definitely say that we've got, you know, two or three new guys that we can call upon. AJ Hawk, I know he's 31 and didn't play great the last couple of years in Green Bay, but there's hope that he can sort of add something to the team. And I think in the secondary as well, we've some young guys on the ascendancy in Trey Kirkpatrick and Darko Tenard that we're hoping can step up, and a couple of nice potential rookies as well. And we've got two really strong safeties that I'm not sure a lot of people will know the name. Reggie Nelson probably, but George Iloka is somebody who was fantastic last year. So hopefully he can do well in his contract year as well.
So Rex, in Baltimore last year, it was all about, well, Ray Lewis is retiring. What are they going to do in Baltimore? And CJ Mosley really did a lot to help people forget about Ray Lewis.
Yeah, CJ Mosley was everything as advertised and more. And then you teamed him with a good veteran like Daryl Smith, and our run defense was just fine last year. Everybody's going to point to this year, oh, you're without Haloti Ngata, but Ozzie had players, and he would not have let Haloti Ngata go if he wasn't confident in Brandon Williams' ability to play the nose and plug the run, and Tim Jernigan to play defensive end. And Jernigan is, for all of what it appears right now, is a much better pass rusher than Haloti Ngata was. Now, he's not as big as Ngata, so he may not be able to stand up against the run as well as Ngata, but I'll take the pass rush when you have teams trying to pass as much as they do now.
So, and in Pittsburgh, Greg, as I'm looking at your secondary, and not to bring up the Patriots, but I am, we all know the Patriots secondary woes this coming season, but I might take the Patriots secondary over yours.
Well, the big tagline that I've been reading is get your programs ready, because we have no idea who any of these guys are.
I mean, well, for the first time, I think.
Well, big play Willie Gay. Yeah, he's pretty good. But we'll take him as a slot corner, but he's starting now. So this is the first time in 12 years we don't have Ike Taylor and Troy Polamalu back there. And last year they added Mike Mitchell, which everyone is still getting comfortable with. The entire secondary revolves around this Cortez Allen, who they signed to a huge contract, I think, last offseason. And he ended up getting benched through 8 games. And he gave them absolutely nothing in the second half of the season. And they are playing... They had to play Willie Gay, Bryce McCain, and some other guy that was really short. So I think their average height of their corners is like 5'9". They're small, and that's going to be the biggest problem. The only advantage I see over last season is that the guys are actually younger and can actually play still. And I love Ike Taylor, but I'm hoping the second-round pick, Golson, that they took out of Old Miss, he supposedly has ball skills, and Ike Taylor couldn't catch a cold. So we'll see, but it's going to be a little rough in the secondary for sure. They might be 32 on if you had a secondary power ranking.
How do you feel? This is also the first year without your defensive coordinator of many years in Dick LeBeau. Is this the first year, or is this the second year without Dick LeBeau? The years
this is
seem
the first
to be melting
year.
Away. Thank you.
Yeah.
So what's the comfort level here in Pittsburgh without Dick LeBeau around?
They're confident. They've had a plan in place for a while now. Keith Butler is the new defensive coordinator. And a few years ago when they fired Bruce Arians tried to take him to the Colts with Chuck Pagano, this Keith Butler guy, and they ended up ponying up $1 million a year to keep him as the heir apparent as defensive coordinator. So they're selling it as everything's going to be just as it always has been, because they have the entire rest of the defensive coaching staff still in place from last season. The only change was Dick LeBeau. So we will miss Dick LeBeau's play calling on game days, but the preparation should be exactly the same. So I don't know if that's good or bad. It's going to be exactly the same, but it's definitely, you know, reassuring that they had a plan a couple years out, knowing Dick's age and everything.
If I could just chime in on that one, obviously having gone through a transition like that last year, I think there's never been a situation where the following year of a new coordinator in-house has improved the defense. So there'll be some regression. That's just par for the course, because it is a new role for them. But hopefully, I guess for you guys, it's not that bad, because I'm sure the principles will still be the same. And Mike Tomlin as well, I think it's about time he put his sort of stamp on the defense as well, because I think he kind of let that sort of let LeBeau sort of handle that. And I think it'd be interesting to see potentially if there's more aggressiveness from the Steelers as opposed to sort of their bend, don't break type approach in the past.
It's interesting you say that, the bend, not break, because that was LeBeau's forte, but at different times, once you got across the 40-yard line, you couldn't get more aggressive than Dick LeBeau. And I'm kind of worried that that's actually going to go away, because they used to bring all-out blitzes, you know, spontaneously on a 2nd and 9 when the team got to the 40-yard line. And I kind of love that about the defense. I always thought it was, you know, pretty macho and tough of them just to throw caution to the wind after they were so cautious all the way down the field.
All right, it's schedule prediction time, and Rex, I'm going to start with you. What do you expect the season finale record to be, and what would be a disappointment in terms of record for you?
I believe the Ravens will win the division at 10-6. Now, I said earlier that anything less than I think they're going to be one of the best teams in the AFC, certainly, but their record won't reflect that. They won't have a gaudy 14-2, 13-3 record because, as I believe Simon pointed out earlier, how tough the whole division schedule is going to be this year. But I think they're going to win the division at 10-6, and then they're going to go into the playoffs and make it to the Super Bowl. Like I said earlier, there is little doubt in my mind. I've never been as confident as I am this year. A disappointment would be anything less than a playoff appearance. And the only way that I see that happening is injuries.
Interesting. So I'm looking at you. I'm actually looking at your schedule right now. I'm doing my silly and ridiculous way too early to predict game by game. And I have you at 12-4, and really the fourth loss is is week 17, where it's going to be irrelevant for you at Cincinnati. I like your schedule. I don't think it's as tough as you guys think it is. You do start tough on the road at Denver, and I will be interested to see that game at Arizona for the Ravens. But ultimately, I mean, you guys have the NFC
five of their first eight games are on the road, and they have two 3-game West Coast trips split up. They go to, Denver, Oakland. I'm sorry, two game, Denver, Oakland, and then San Francisco, Arizona. So they're going to be games where Harbaugh in all likelihood just keeps them out there.
Greg, I'm going to jump to you in Pittsburgh because that was the team I did next. What do you see your schedule at, and what would be a disappointment for you in Pittsburgh?
I think 10-6 will be a good season with their back end of their schedule. A disappointment would be anything less, of course, because that means they will not win the division and most likely not make the playoffs. Just looking at their schedule, I mean, thank goodness Brady's out that first game of the season, because I was having a hard time.
Win in that game.
Yeah, I have that now as a win. But going into that, I was having a hard time getting the 10 wins before that. Their last 6 games after their bye, they're at the Seahawks, home against the Colts, at the Bengals, home against the Broncos, and then at the Ravens, at the Browns. I mean, that's the toughest end of a 6-game schedule I've ever seen, that I've ever paid attention to, at least. So they better start strong. They better be 6-3 going into their bye, or they're not going to have a shot at it. So,
well, I definitely have at 10-6 as I look over your schedule. I am interested to see that game week 6 hosting Arizona. As we all know, the Pittsburgh Steelers of the West Coast. I think where you guys really lucked out is, one, the Brady suspension, and two, this craziness going on in San Francisco. I think one of the keys for all the teams this year is really going to be what do we believe St. Louis is going to be. You know, I've read a lot that St. Louis is sort of the darling right now of a lot of analysts. I don't know if I buy it or not, but St. Louis is definitely going to be a wild card for you guys in this division this year. I mean, they're not in your division, but you're all playing against them.
Yeah, and I'm counting all three of those games you just mentioned as wins. So they bet. Hopefully, St. Louis stinks. But
yeah, honestly, for Pittsburgh, it's after the bye week in week 11 when you're at Seattle, you're hosting Indy, you're at a division rival in Cincy, you're hosting Denver, and then you're at your other two divisions in Baltimore and Cleveland. The end of your schedule really sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. I just can't believe they gave them all their away division games in the last 4 weeks of the season. You got to beat the guys at their place to win the division. So I guess they're going to have to do that.
All right. So while Greg was talking, English Simon, I went and looked at your team and your schedule, and I actually have you at third with a 9-7 record. What say you?
Yeah, I think we might be a game or two better than that if we play our best football. I think 9-7, you know, feels about right. I think if you look at the Vegas odds, I think we're over 8.5. So that's definitely the way that they view it as well. I think we've got some interesting fixtures that we always have always done well since Dalton came in against NFC opponents. And I know we've got the West, but I think we could easily go 3-1 in those games. I think if we can share the games with the Steelers and the Ravens, I think that will be a positive result. So I can see us being 11-5, being a playoff team again. It's just such a tough division to really call, because everybody can beat everybody really, and it comes down to a couple of games here and there that kind of decide it. And it's, no one's kind of gone away from the other teams in the division for a while now, and I think it's going to be close. And we just got to give ourselves a chance, because we've got two really tough back-to-back road games. I know the 49ers, you know, I have gone through some trouble, but still a West Coast game, and then we go to Denver on Monday Night Football. So it's going to be tough, and that's sandwiched in between a Steelers game and a Ravens game. I know they're both at home, but they're still always tough games, always close games. So yeah, there'll be a lot of 3-point wins next year or losses, and I think that's kind of par for the course for the AFC North, to be honest.
And Rob, you're in there in Cleveland. We didn't harp a lot on the Johnny Manziel situation and a lot of the things going on there in Cleveland. I think I might be generous in giving you three victories. I do believe you guys are in contention
with the first pick in the NFL draft.
It certainly is looking bleak. I mean, I have what's nice for you is two of the three wins that I've given you are right at the beginning of the season, week two.
That's
and week
right.
three. You host Tennessee and you host Oakland at New York week one. I mean, that game honestly could go either way. We mentioned it's all about your defense. If you stay close, you might be able to pull that one out. And the third, but that's not the one I gave. The one that I gave you was San Francisco, and I might be just too down on San Francisco. But by the end of the season, which is week 14, you host them, the West Coast team coming East Coast, although it's not quite East Coast, still not good for them. And I'm not liking the way that their team's shaping up this season. But it doesn't look good for you.
Yeah, it's a really strange schedule. So I have, you're going to laugh, but we were talking about Vegas, we were the lowest in terms of the over-unders at 6.5, and I have us at 6. I have us at 6-10. I said, I think we'll be a better team, but worse record than last year. But it is a very strange schedule, and the fact that the first three games, I have us a win against New York, just because if it's an either-or game, then I give it to us, just to be generous. And I'm an optimistic Browns fan. But so I have us starting off 3-0, and then the next seven, we have 5 of 7 of those on the road, and they're all playoff teams, or could be playoff teams. And I have one win out of the next one. So by the bye, I have us at 4 wins. So it'll start off great, and I think hearing people in Cleveland will get all excited, and then they're going to fall on their face like usual. So, at San Diego, at Baltimore, then against Denver, then at St. Louis, who I agree, I think you could put me at quarterback, and I think that they'd have a better team because their quarterback play was so bad. I think Nick Foles is a step up from who they had last year, and then their defense is just unbelievable. I actually have us as a win against Arizona at home. I think that they're falling. I don't think they're going to be as good as they were last year. And then at Cincy and at Pitt. And then I have a win against San Francisco as well. I think that they're the bottom of that division. I think they might actually be I'm as down as you are on them. And I think they might be the one going for the number one pick. So disappointment for me is if we end up with three wins, like you said, and are the number one pick. I think we're going to end up with about six wins. And sorry, Rex, but I mean, Simon, I took one from Cincy because we always beat Cincy at least once, at least the past couple of years we have.
Yeah, you always seem to do it when it's very frustrating. I think it's another Thursday night game as well, which is just, it's horrible.
It never bodes well for you and Dalton.
I know, yeah. If we don't have a week to prepare for a game, we just can't win, basically. But, I don't know. I've got a funny feeling there's going to be a few things that since you're doing that game, I've got a feeling we might win that one and maybe lose in Cleveland. But if there's anything like last year, God, we absolutely steamrolled you in Cleveland. So, fingers crossed, Johnny's back behind the back behind center then, and we can and give you guys a good beating again. I think it was 0 points, right?
Yeah.
I'm joking. I'm only joking.
I know this is the AFC North, but you mentioned Arizona being on the downside. Listen, I was not a believer in Arizona year one of Bruce Arians, but year two is the beginning of a trend, and I don't see Arizona falling. If anything, I see Arizona rising. If there's another NFC team that I've got a bigger man crush on than Atlanta, it would probably be Arizona.
Yeah, they had a lot of wins, close wins last year, and I thought that and their defensive line is, you know, it's pretty stout. But losing a couple of those guys, the linebackers that they've had for the past couple of years, I just think is really going to hurt them. And I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan of their offense, but I do like their defense.
All right, guys, that's what I've got listed on my notepad. What have I missed? What do you guys still need to put out there?
I
just wanted to talk one thing. The one bright spot for the Browns is this kid, Terry Spear. I know it's not a great position, but he's their kicker. So he came from Vanderbilt, where his nickname was Murder Leg. And I think this guy is great. If you have a chance, please, 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 just go watch his YouTube clip. He gets the number one hit out of college football for the past 3 years. He's had some amazing hits for a kicker. So that's the only thing we have to look forward to for us.
That is the great – you saved it by mentioning the fact that his nickname is Murder Leg. But when all you have to look forward to – when you have – the only thing you have to look forward to is your kicker, you know it's going to be a tough year. English Simon.
Yeah.
Mine's about this ridiculous two-point conversion change. Well, obviously, the PAT moving back. It's like for our division, it's just like – it's an absolute joke that this should be in place. Like, it's just – the NFL are trying to make a more exciting play happen more often, but it's like, well, yeah, we have to play in these horrible pitches in the middle of freezing cold December, you know, afternoons, and yeah, I don't understand why they've agreed to it. Marvin Lewis is not happy, and I'm not happy neither. And even that dog.
Apparently the dog isn't happy with it either, but the Browns aren't afraid because they've got Murder Leg to take care of those extra long extra points.
That's right.
I got to disagree with you. I like what they've done here. I don't think they've done enough. I mean, they moved it back to what, the 35-yard line that the average NFL kicker still hits at well into the 90%. I think they should have moved it back further to make the play even more exciting.
I totally agree, Rex. I totally agree.
It's just like, I get it, bro. It's just like, why? It's an unfair advantage for somebody in a dome versus in the field. So if one of your teams loses a game based on that play next year, then you can come back and say, okay, you're right, Simon, and I'll accept your apology and we'll move on and be friends still. Don't worry.
Simon, last year, do you actually watch the PATs now unless they're going for two? Well, there you go.
Yeah, you might change my tune out quite quickly. That's a good point. You know what? I'm for it. Why not? Hey,
it's
make life more exciting.
That wasn't
so bad for me. The flip flop, as I'm known. Jesus.
I mean, honestly, I get what you're saying about the outdoor stadium disadvantage in the kick being longer. I think there's obviously certain, like Heinz Field, for instance, comes to mind immediately about kicking field goals at Heinz, and that one particular side of the stadium, it's a lot more difficult than the other. But ultimately, do we really think teams are going to go for two more often than just kick the extra point?
Well, not now, because like I said, they didn't do enough. They went from kickers making what 99 or 98 point something percent of PATs, moving it back to where they make it 96%. They didn't do enough. They should have moved it back further. So no, I don't think this is going to increase any the 2 point conversions, because kickers are still hitting this at a ridiculous amount.
Yeah, and if you have Baltimore's pretty lucky with Justin Tucker, because he hit kicks from like 55 yards. But if they would have moved it back to even just, let's say, a 40-yard field goal, Tomlin would have started going for it pretty much every time, because Swisham, our kicker, his range maxes out at like 45 or 50. Like, he is not a long-distance kicker at all. And, I mean, there just has to be some type of a long-term effect on that. So, I mean, he'll miss a lot of – I bet he's going to miss – I bet I'm going to put him in the leaders and missed extra points this year. I just will, because I don't think he's – one, I don't think he's a very good kicker, and two, his distance isn't there. So they would have moved back 7 more yards. It would have had a real impact, I think.
Simon, I'm glad you brought this topic up, because now I'm really starting to run my mind through this. So do we think they're going to call more penalties too with these extra – if teams are going for two, I can only imagine there's going to be a lot of mugging going around – inside that end zone. Do we think the refs are going to be pulling out yellow hankies calling pass interference? I don't think they're going to. I think they're going to just let them play, and that's only going to lead to more conversation and controversy. I think that's a horrible idea.
The other thing too is if you get a penalty on the play before for celebrating in the end zone, now your PAT is farther back and you're getting lower percentage. So those ones that went from the 1 yard line, it was just a stupid penalty. Now it's at the 15 and I kick it in. That goes from the 15 to like the 30. Now you got a 45-yard field goal, 47-yard field goal, or PAT, I mean.
Well, I saw that they just changed that rule, though. I saw that the penalty for celebrating is now only on the kickoff. It won't affect the extra point. That was one caveat they added, but it's only for celebration.
Yeah, see, I think they should absolutely put it on to the extra point now, because what's the disadvantage on the kickoff? So the guy kicks it even further into the stands than what he already does.
Yeah.
Well, let's remember the NFL is all about safety. So what they don't want is extra plays. And I'm saying this sarcastically, boys.
Right. And the 49ers, I mean, still have what, 40 something more players to retire. So
that kid is really old, Phil Dawson. He'll probably retire by the time this podcast is out. So that's going to be awesome. They need murder leg. That's a
murder
Everybody
leg.
Needs a little bit of murder leg.
Oh, I love it. Murder leg. Well, folks, if you want to get in on what we're doing here with the super fans, and you are a fan of the Houston Texans, perhaps you're a fan of the really crappy Buffalo Bills and the Arizona Cardinals, whom, you know, I don't want to fill in for the Arizona Cardinals, but I gladly will. Send us in your applications, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at NFU Podcast and find us on Facebook. Just search Next Fan Up or go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast. We'll be back again next week. I will not be. You'll have another host filling in, and I believe we are doing the AFC South next week. So you're going to want to tune in and check out the Colts, whom...
Any chance that next week's host is a recently released podcaster with the initials of BS?
I have no comment on potential free agent podcasters. I'm not allowed, as he's still under contract until September. But I'll just leave it at that.
Stop talking BS here, Pod. Come on. Tell the fans what you want to know.
It's been a great time here with you, gentlemen of the AFC North. As always, I have a great time with you gentlemen. And with that, I will say there you.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.
Yeah, it's like five guys just in a bar just chatting football. It was great fun.